H&I didn't exist, there would be no meetings in there to make that contact. The purpose of the committee is to make sure this is done in a responsible manner, to make sure that we follow Narcotics Anonymous's traditions, and that so we do things so that we don't do any damage, both to the addict we're trying to reach out to and to Narcotics Anonymous. This helps us to carry the message that is consistently a Narcotics Anonymous message of recovery, and it also protects us as we go in, because some of the situations in there can be pretty upsetting. Our first speaker will be Susie from the New Hope meeting in Ohio. She's going to tell us why H&I is needed.
Hi, family. I'm an addict named Susie. I spoke at a function a while back, and there was a logo on the wall that said, correct me if I'm wrong, Bryce, I might have it backwards, but it doesn't make any difference because it means the same thing either way. And it said, I didn't die because of H&I. That was true for me. I went into the penitentiary with 5 months clean on June 20th of 1997. And I just can't tell you what one NA meeting a week meant to me in there, because I had left a very supportive Narcotics Anonymous group, a Narcotics Anonymous group that would pass an extra basket once a month to send to put on my books. Just, you know, the cards and letters from my group. And then I went to this penitentiary where I was a number in blue clothes, like everybody else. And on Wednesdays, when I would stand at the door for that 5-minute whistle to go off so we could move to wherever we needed to go in that 5-minute period and see those women walking in. Well, it was one woman in particular that was always there, but she would bring as many with her as she could. It just made my whole week. It took me from Wednesday to Wednesday. I also went through 3 rehabs, and every rehab that I went through, including the last one, were very other fellowship oriented. So H&I wasn't very strong in there, and a lot of the reason it wasn't very strong in there is because a lot of people just didn't want to get involved in H&I. And I don't wish jail or prison on anybody, but if you could have been in my shoes or anyone else's shoes who has been in a facility, especially prison or a long term in jail, that's our only hope for a long time. It's that one thing we have to keep us going. Because if you go, you know, you go into a facility and you know how hard it is to stay clean on the outside in the beginning. So, you know, and it's not hard to get what you want in a correctional facility. It's just not. It's available. So you can imagine when you go into a prison and a treatment center, you go in there afraid just as well. The fear, the loneliness. And I can't emphasize enough how that feeling when H&I would come through that door. It was my family. It was that one piece of the outside that I had that was Narcotics Anonymous, because Narcotics Anonymous was all I had then, because I'd exhausted everything else. I mean, I had my children, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I had distorted the relationship from my using and abusing, and this was my one healthy connection. And I tell you, you know, I've been clean since January 31st of 1997, and there's not a day go by that I don't think about this lady named Jean who brought this meeting into the Kansas Correctional Facility for Women. Not a day. I can't think of a day that at one point in time I don't think about that. And like Dave was saying, you know, sometimes H&I is the first and only taste someone gets of Narcotics Anonymous. And, and I think the important thing today is that, well, it's not the important thing, and it's an opinion, and it's my opinion, and that is that we have a responsibility as Narcotics Anonymous members to do our part for H&I and to carry a message into these facilities and to carry a clear message into these facilities. And you know, and Dave touched on this a little bit too, and to be responsible and to watch how we carry ourselves into these facilities. When we go into a facility with H&I, we're still representing Narcotics Anonymous. And like we read on this reading about this retreat, you know, our behavior is a direct reflection of Narcotics Anonymous as a whole, you know. And people would just love to bite into that judicial system part of us that is the old part of us. It's not the new part of us. Narcotics Anonymous is the new part of us. You know, our criminal life is part of the wreckage of our past. So if you've never been involved in H&I, I'm going to stand up here and tell you from both sides of the fence that it's extremely important. We are responsible as members of Narcotics Anonymous to do our part and carry a message into any facility whenever we're asked if we're able to do so. And I'd like to thank you, Dave, for asking me to get up here and speak about this. It kind of brought back a lot of things that I needed to remember.
Thank you, Susie. I am going to pass out a sign-up sheet, too. It's an H&I volunteer sheet. This does count as a workshop toward the yearly requirements for a workshop. And while we're on that, about the need for H&I or the function or what H&I is needed for, I want to touch a little on the other side about what it does for the person that goes in, the volunteer for H&I. I know it's been, beyond a doubt, one of the most enriching, the sweetest part of my recovery to be able to go in there. I always come out with more than what I go into. And there are some facilities in our area, particularly correctional facilities, where H&I is thriving behind the wall, where these men are working the steps, men and women, and are sponsoring each other, and truly, truly a rewarding experience. Some of the best meetings I go to are behind the wall. And one of the important things I see with what H&I is doing, I took a speaker in one time to a facility in our area, and during the course of his sharing, he said that, you know, the people out there, you know, they know about this meeting. They've heard about this meeting and how good it is. And if they could come in, if it was an open meeting, there wouldn't be enough chairs in this room to hold them all. And all of these inmates, they actually physically went back like a foot and all started to talk at one time to each other. It, you know, that touched them so much, it connected them. It was a long-term correctional facility. It connected them with all of us. They felt a part of because of that speaker going in there, volunteering to go in and share his experience and strength with those people. He touched them so that they just chattered for about 8 seconds, and then they were glowing. They were all grinning. They were part of us, and that meant so much to them. We have Lance to talk a little bit on the types of facilities that we go into and the differences. I give you Lance from Back to Basics.
Hi, I'm Lance. I'm an addict.
Hey, Lance.
I don't know about anybody else, but I'm functioning on very little sleep, and I feel like I'm reaching a new level of consciousness in my sleep deprivation here. First of all, I'd like to thank Dave for asking me. It's always an honor to think that somebody might think I have something to say. I guess I'd like to do a show of hands. How many people here haven't done H&I? Okay. I just want to get a perspective because sometimes I want to know what I'm talking about, whether I'm preaching to the choir or you know what I mean. Sometimes, and I don't know what that's all about, but sometimes it seems like the only people in an H&I workshop are those that are doing H&I. I learned about H&I through my sponsor, as most of recovery, and when I asked them, you know, why I had to do stuff like this, you know, because I pictured like I was going to be out on the corner handing out literature to traffic like a Mooney or some kind of a cult, you know, and he said, no, that ain't it. You don't get it. He says, you need to be doing this because you're a self-centered, greedy, selfish son of a bitch, basically. And you never wanted to help anybody or even give of yourself freely your entire act of addiction. And you know what? He was right. You know, I didn't care about anybody but myself, how I was going to get it in me, and what I had to do to you to get it. You know, whether con, manipulate, pretend like I was your friend, whatever. You know, I come from, you know, I'd steal your dope and help you look for it. You know, those kind of things. So hospitals and institutions, for me, the reason why I got involved was because my sponsor said it would help me change who I was. And I really believe in this premise. I heard an opening speaker say, if you get something out of what's said here, don't give me the credit. If you don't get anything out of what's said here, don't blame me either. Yeah. And I believe in the first step of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm powerless over this disease called addiction, and I can't make anybody get clean. So I don't do H&I because I think I'm going to save somebody's ass. I bury a lot of people that I tried to save their ass over the almost 15 years I've been clean, 14 years, 10 months. And so I know the first step all too well. I am powerless over the disease of addiction. And I've been a hostage, I've been an emotional wreck, and I know what this disease does to people that don't choose to follow a new way of life. I do H&I because, if anything, at the end of the night, I'm clean. Somebody else gets something out of it while I'm there, that's a bonus. And if anybody asks me to help them, I'm there in a heartbeat. But I don't do it to save the world, believe me. Those days are long gone. I've probably, since I've had 6 months clean, been involved in hospitals and institutions. And the reason why, how I got involved, I should say, is I was a GSR, and our area had about 10 home groups out of the South Hills area of Pittsburgh at the time. And my sponsor said, why don't you come over to H&I? Because there was only 3 people conducting 10 meetings or trying to, you know, it was falling apart. And so because my sponsor said so, I went over, and I had about 10 months clean. And the chair said, is there anybody here be willing to be the H&I vice chair? I mean, there was 3 of us in the room, the H&I chair, myself, and my sponsor. So I looked at my sponsor. He said, yeah, it'd be a good learning experience. And so I said, okay, I'll volunteer for that and just learn what's going on with the subcommittee and panel coordinators and panel leaders. Of course, then we called them sponsors and chairpersons. The H&I handbook kind of clarifies that because some waters would get confusing about that, talking about that. Because you can't sponsor inmates and stuff like that. It kind of lends to favoritism and stuff like that. We need to treat everybody equal when we're doing those kind of things. Because it could cause problems at the facility. So I was also a GSR in my home group. And at the area, which met about an hour later, the H&I chair told the committee that he had been using for the last 3 months and said, this is the new pro tem H&I chair. And that was my induction into hospitals and institutions, full blown. And it was a godsend, I guess, because I got to tell you, everything that has happened to me in the course of my recovery has altered the rest of my life, and all of my affairs. So I don't know about anybody else here, but I panicked, and I had to be like the perfect H&I chair. I ran out and bought a computer, went in debt for it, you know, crashed it 3 or 4. I mean, this is back when you had to type DOS into things, all right? You didn't have Windows. Windows wasn't around yet. I think a thing called, I can't remember what the hell the program was. But because of that, later on in my life, because of being a chairperson, because of learning how to pull people together, see, there was people doing H&I commitments across our area, but they didn't want to come to the subcommittee. They were like their own little power structures, their own little, this is my facility. You know how we are. That's how we are, man. Yeah. And so I called them up, and I said, I've been, because I was elected the month after that as the chair from the Conscience of the South Hills, what 11 groups there was. And I would call those folks up, and, you know, we do what we do best, right? I called them up and said, look, we just formed a new H&I subcommittee. I understand that you've been responsible enough to take a meeting to Washington County Jail, Greenbrier Treatment Center, Gateway, all those. I called them all individually and said, look, we're having elections for panel coordinators. There are people lining up to get these positions. If you show up, you've already been doing the position, you have a good chance of being elected. If not, someone else is going to take this position. They were all there the next month. And so my character defects, my carny manipulation in that, did serve some purpose. And I learned that I have some power to organization and that kind of stuff. I knew nothing about this stuff. Nothing. You know, nothing. I know this, though. Once we all came together and we're in one room, we all had the same thing in common. All right? H&I was our focus, and over those years, I've done, you know, everybody, the volunteer sign-up sheets, everybody wants to know, can I get back to the 28-day treatment center that I came from and all that stuff. You know, nobody wants to do the forensic units. Nobody wants to do the psychiatric units. You know, not a whole lot of people are thrilled about going back to a correctional facility or can't get through the clearance check. So, you know, I had to learn some things about my own judgment of people, you know, on volunteers and that, you know, because sometimes you get these folks running at you that just want the perfect, pretty little facility. Currently I do, because of my job, I'm in Pittsburgh during the Monday through Thursday during the week. So I do have an H&I commitment in Washington, PA, Greenbrier, and it's just about up. I've been there almost 2 years, and I got to give it up here in October. It's a 28-day treatment facility, and I guess the great thing about that is, is that once a month I get to go in as a panel leader and bring some panel members with me. In the South Hills, I believe it's 3 months to attend, 6 months to share. And I always try to, I don't know about anybody else, but when I had my first 6 months clean or whatever, if somebody said they had 3, 5, 6, 10 years clean, I thought they were lying. Bottom line. You know, they had to be using somewhere along the line. They just hadn't told anybody yet. So I always try to take folks in that are a little closer to being new and have, you know, a strong message of Narcotics Anonymous. I think that's the utmost importance, because the only thing that woke me up, because I've been through a couple of rehabs and detoxes, the only thing that woke me up was an NA member that came in and shared the way we share. You know, because the counselors, and even if they were in recovery or whatever, I viewed them as like the authority or the treatment center. You know how this disease clouds my perception. So when this guy came in, my last rehab, these folks, and sat down and I don't know if you would call it a structured H&I committee, but when they came in and did that at the time, we're talking 1988 in Hollidaysburg, Altoona area, place called Cove Forge. They woke something up in me. I could relate. You know, so I really think that's what's important, that we carry a true Narcotics Anonymous message. And I always make sure I tell the folks that we're not here to tell anybody they're an addict. That's regardless of 28-day jail, psychiatric units, or whatever. I think that's important. I think I always let them know that, you know, if you hear anything here that you can relate to, maybe you might want to look into a little further and that kind of stuff. You know, it's about attraction rather than promotion. Some of the interesting things, besides, in over the years, I know when I did the psychiatric units at Mayview General, we would go in there and conduct a meeting, and you know, I have a hard time on a daily basis having any real gratitude for where I'm at or what I just might have internally, mentally, in my heart, or materialistically. And to be at a psychiatric unit and see those folks come in and realize that I was probably that close to the psychotic side, you know, kicking that door open in my mind that sometimes with stuff I use, I'm pretty grateful that didn't happen to me. But I think the most amazing thing about Mayview General that I can remember is they would come in, medicated, doing their routine in this almost zombie state with a Thorazine drool, and sit down, and I would introduce a speaker and would do like a mini lead, and we would open it up for discussion. And for an hour, there was sanity and clarity in that room. And I don't know why that happened. Well, I got a pretty good idea. And at the end of the meeting, we would close, and they would return to their Thorazine shuffle and out the door. And I would go, wow, man, what just happened here? Every week, we spent an hour of sanity, of clarity, of sharing pain and experiences and relating to one another. You know, so it gave me some things that I don't think I could have got anywhere else, you know, personally. And I've seen people from those facilities later on, and that's the bonus, right? That's the cha-ching, you know. You see them at a meeting, and they're learning to be a productive member of society, facing life one every day. Some of the other things I experienced, and you know, if somebody would have told me this, I would have thought this was like something out of, because it almost sounds too surreal, actually. We used to do a head trauma unit, and there was a lot of controversy. Actually, it was one of the first head trauma units that Narcotics Anonymous did in the United States. It's called the Greenery. I said, what sick individual named this head trauma unit the Greenery? A bunch of vegetables in here, you know, it's kind of... But these folks had gone through some kind of head trauma through accidents. Guess what? You know, high and loaded and driving. There was a guy in there in a wheelchair named Tony that had tried to blow his head off after 7 years clean, and now he was in a wheelchair and had a massive head trauma. And I learned, once again, some humility and patience. We used the large print literature a lot of the time, and it would take maybe 10 minutes for somebody to read who was an addict. I had a newfound humility for being able just to be able to read. I'm a slow reader anyway, but after hearing Tony read it for 10 minutes, I learned some patience and some tolerance and understanding and some compassion, actually. But there was this one individual that they would continue to bring in the room that was in a coma. And I kept saying to myself, why are these people bringing this guy in this bed into our meeting? He was an addict. He was an addict, definitely. That's how he was in a coma, because of drug-induced overdose. And 8 months later, he woke up and closed with the Serenity Prayer. We were in the middle of it. And I was like, this sounds like something out of, a plea for some religious stuff. But it really moved me. It really moved me. And then I talked to some other people in recovery that had been in comas. And they said they remember when they were in comas being able to hear stuff but didn't want to respond. You know, those kind of situations. So you never know who's listening. You know, you never know. And that's wild. I mean, that's, and there's a lot of times, like even today, I don't even think about those things that have been presented to me, but I need to. You know, I need to. I need to remember that stuff because I start with the poor me's and I start bitching and complaining and I start, you know, all the whining stuff that I do best as an addict. And H&I has given me stuff that it tells me a whole lot about myself, actually. I've had some experience in corrections, and I know one thing, and just like adolescent facilities, I've had experience with adolescent facilities too, that, you know, we never talk down to them as if they're kids, because you know what, some of them have been more mature than me, and listening to them share there, and they've given me great gifts too. So I always try to, you know, doesn't matter what age, sex, religion, lack of religion, age, that stuff doesn't matter, you know. Adolescent facilities have been great stuff for me. I sponsored a guy that was the next H&I chair, and he went through the painful experience of having a member that was doing H&I in an adolescent facility later meet with one of the girls at meetings and was basically corrupting the morals of a minor. So I've been through that experience too with adolescent facilities through my sponsee that was the H&I chair at the time. And I was still involved in H&I as a panel coordinator. And so you got to watch, you know, you got to make sure who we're trusting as trusted servants and as volunteers. Because that put a pretty good mark on Narcotics Anonymous in the South Hills area for a while in Pittsburgh. You know, shit hit the fan. I've been through that. But once again, also, I've seen those young folks show up later on in the meeting, and it was a good feeling to know that just like anything else, just like being in the meeting or right here today or whatever, I really believe that the process for me is that the hell I used to live in addiction now has some value. It wasn't worth, you know, it wasn't in vain. It wasn't worthless. It has a little bit of value if you later on you see somebody show up because you shared what you went through or you shared the feelings you went through or emotions you went through. So there's a little bit of redemption there for myself. And it wasn't in vain. Because this disease likes to tell me that I just waste a whole lot of time. I hurt a whole lot of people and you know, build that pile, that mountain so high that I can't dig myself out of it. The correctional facilities probably, for me, I miss the most because it was a meeting for me. I used to drive an hour and a half out of Pittsburgh as a special kind of thing with the region and some areas. We would volunteer to travel long distances. I would travel up here to Somerset SCI when they first opened up because they wanted Narcotics Anonymous. I would drive an hour and a half one way, and I'd sit in a room with 80 men, and the COs couldn't understand why I didn't want to take the panic button with me. I said, man, if I wear that panic button, I'm one of you. I'm an addict. I'm going to that meeting because I'm going where I'm with one of my own kind, you know. And I needed to do that for myself. And you know what? I felt more safe at that meeting than I did with the COs. If there's any COs here, I don't mean to offend you, because I know there's a lot of us in recovery that, you know, have all different walks of life. So there could be some police officers here or even district attorneys. But I really connected with those men, and that was probably the best meeting I did once a month. We would take turns coming from different areas, you know, out of Pittsburgh. And those guys don't, those men didn't have to pretend, you know. There was an atmosphere there of true honesty that I don't think I've been able to find anywhere else, because it wasn't about pretending anymore. You know, it was about the real deal there. You have to experience something like that. Maybe you have, but that's what I experienced. You have to do that kind of meeting to experience that level of honesty. And, you know, this ain't about bullshit. It wasn't about bullshit. And I learned that, you know, that my prisons were self-made. It doesn't matter what I'm surrounded with. It's what's really going on up in my mind and in my heart. And that, those men showed me those principles and those characteristics. Did I leave anything out as far as institutions go? I've done county jails. Right now, a jolt in the arm for the Warmont and Highlands area, because I'm home here, and this is really, truly my current area, even though I'm a little bit involved down in the South Hills still since I worked there, but this has been home for like the last 8 or 9 years. And we've all been so close, and part of this retreat I'm involved in too, but because there's so little of us in an 8-county area, just trying to get another day clean, you know. So this takes up a lot of the time. We'd be like thinking about the crazy shit, and we had a H&I meeting going into Blair County Prison over by Altoona, Hollidaysburg, and. And for some reason or another, they tend to have, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I think that everybody knows about Narcotics Anonymous, but there's a lot of things that are still going on in our country, you know, in the rural areas, that the facilities, the wardens, the superintendents, the political structure, the district's attorneys, they don't know who we are as a fellowship. And so they think of us as, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. Thanks, Susie. they don't know. They still think we're like, you know, going to be bringing the stuff in, you know, and sneaking it inside the basic text, you know, making deals or whatever, setting up connections. I know they think that stuff. So we lost our H&I commitment at Blair County because of those perceptions, even from the counselors, the DNA counselors. And I'm not judging them. I'm just saying that's their perception. It was nothing that we had done, nothing that the H&I committee had done, and we lost that commitment. But lately, last area of service, we were our helpline was contacted by the district attorney of Blair County, and the, I don't know if he's a legislator or Senator Schuster, wants to know more about us, and public information reported that area, and of course we all would get a sit down with these folks. So that's another jolt. Public information is a big part with H&I when it comes out to informing the public who we are as H&I and do's and don'ts, and you know they start seeing that when we start telling them our structure and our responsibilities, and you know why it's a closed meeting. Why we don't bring in just anybody to a meeting. Some facilities want to open the meeting to the whole outside world when we're coming in. You know, we had that problem too in our area. And we said, well, what if somebody brings some stuff in? You know, we're not control. We need our H&I meeting to be a closed meeting so we know what we're bringing in and the message we're delivering. When the facility invites the masses, the stuff can show up. The stuff can show up. I don't know about you, but that's where my mind goes instantly. You know, and so once we presented ourselves through the H&I committee chairperson and public information and those kind of avenues, and tell them why we are who we are and why we do the things the way we do them in our H&I structure. They have a more profound respect for us, you know, and I believe that's what we need to do. You know, we need to show them that today we do have integrity. Today we do have a structure because nobody knows us like we know us. They don't know us. And they don't. They really don't. They think they do. Psychology, behavioral modification, all that stuff. You know, and that's great. We probably do exhibit all those traits, but we know who we really are. You know, and I believe that in my heart. And when we present ourselves in that kind of light, and an honest and open sharing with those facilities, they come to have a greater respect for us. I don't know if I said anything here or gave you an experience to maybe what you might run across. I'll leave you with this one story too. We always have problems getting volunteers for the criminally insane, the forensic unit. They were a great bunch. And that particular place would make us strip down naked almost, just to get in for an hour. Maybe the general. I don't know if they still do that. But if the detector went off, you were taking your pants off, your socks off. There was this one fellow that would always come in, and he had the duck to come in the doorway. And always he'd be barefoot and just coveralls, bib coveralls, and he would sit down and just stare at me for an hour every time I went there. Unnerving, you know, unnerving. With this kind of crazed, distant look in his eye. The joke, since we're always looking for one, was about... A year and a half later, he was convicted. They didn't buy into his, you know how we do. We do those routines, you know. Hopefully we're going to get the easier, softer way out. But he wrote our H&I subcommittee, our area, a year and a half later, and thanked us for bringing that meeting in. And he had like a year clean at a correctional facility, and there was an H&I meeting coming in there. And I would have never thought that that guy was going to get clean. So that just tells you how much I know. That's why I want to thank the committee for asking me to share, and have a good night and true. Thanks.
Thank you, Lance. I asked Lance about 45 minutes if he'd share, and about 5 minutes before the meeting started, gave him a pick a topic. That's an example of a spiritual principle I don't hear about very often or often enough, sacrifice. Lance talked about a lot of the different kinds of facilities we go into. Personally, I go into correctional facilities, and there are two different types of them, short-term and long-term. The boot camp, although by our guidelines, any facility with inmates for a year or more are considered long-term, the boot camp is kind of an intermediate term. But each one requires a little bit of a different approach. I know I go into a county jail, and it's a short-term facility. I see different faces quite often. They turn over very quickly. I don't see the same people very often. That type of facility requires the basics. You know, the first three steps. What is NA? The real basics on an introduction to the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship. At the other end of the spectrum, I go into a correctional facility where some of the men are serving 50 years, 50 to life, 25 to 50. I see them on a very regular basis. Their recovery is much deeper and more involved, and the meetings that we take in there can be deeper and more involved. That particular meeting is a speaker meeting. We take speakers in. When we fail to get a speaker, it's a discussion meeting, and one of the best ones that I attend in or out of the facilities. The intermediate, kind of like, is the middle of the road. I have people, inmates that are there that have some sort of a foundation in recovery, and others that are tasting Narcotics Anonymous for the very first time. That's also a speaker meeting. The relationship with these facilities, which Lance also talked about, I've seen what he said about how some of the facilities have no idea what we're about and treat me accordingly. Others do have some idea. That goes from both ends of the spectrum. I've had them put stumbling blocks to even getting in. I went to a facility recently just for a photo ID and orientation, pretty much dressed like this, not to go to a meeting, but just to get my ID. And they would not let me in because I was wearing shorts. Now, the visitors were going in wearing shorts, but their policy is no shorts. And the commander that day was insistent. It was a 140-mile drive, you know, to this facility in the evening just to get a picture taken. It took a month to set it up. Fortunately, someone interceded. But neither I nor my partner that went with me thought about it, because we both knew that we weren't allowed to wear shorts to the meetings, but we never thought just going into their, you know, their facility for a photograph would matter. I also had a facility insist recently that we change our method of getting speakers, outside speakers, to come in. They want them to go through the entire volunteer application process, which sometimes takes 3 months, virtually impossible for us to do. But through a close contact with the faculty of that place, we were able to come to an agreement on something less. You know, they're going to fax me forms that they can sign and fill out, and also a guideline for the facility to read for safety before they go in. That we can do. So it took communication. Another facility that we go into trust us so much that they ask for a name of a speaker. No social security number, no driver's license, no birth date, no state, no nothing, just a name. We trust you that you are following your guidelines, that there are no they're not on a visiting pass at this facility, or they're not carrying any paper, parole, or probation, or warrants, or anything. Also, at that same facility, we used to have a monitor sit in the meeting with us. We used to have a guard escort us to the rooms. There are 8 gates between where I park the car and where we have our meeting. There are 8 gates, go boom. Now they just say, you know, sign in, stick your name tag on, and as I go through the facility, they go clank, clank, clank. My partner and I, they just open them from the, you know, with no accompaniment at all. The trust has grown, and they've learned a little bit of what Narcotics Anonymous is about. Our next speaker is going to touch on H&I's relationship with the facilities. I'll give you Bob S. from Just for Tonight.
Maddie, my name is Bob.
Hey, Bob.
You know, first thing I want to say without H&I, I wouldn't be here. I, at different times in my recovery, I've come to find out just what H&I commitments have meant to me over a period of time as I've struggled through a variety of adjustments in trying to find a new way to live. I always had an H&I commitment on a weekly basis. I had like 3.5 months clean when I got out of the penitentiary. When they brought H&I in there, I went to the yard to get high. I didn't go to no H&I meetings when I was on the inside, even though they was bringing them in every week. They had one a week, you know, it's a mild experience difference from Susie in that respect, because I wasn't ready to stop. I had like 3.5 months clean. It took me about a month to get the courage to ask somebody to be my sponsor. That was on a Wednesday, and on that Saturday, he took me along as a guest to an H&I commitment at an adolescent facility. And naturally, you know, as grandiose as we are, you know, between Wednesday and Saturday, I had all this conjured up, man. I was going to save these kids from being like me, right? Didn't know I wasn't even going to be allowed to open my mouth. But I had the answer for everybody else. And I'm so grateful today that I had an opportunity to go to that facility. I probably missed 3 Saturdays in the first 2.5 years that I was in this area. And I learned that the only difference from myself and them was our chronological age. It was, as far as what was really going on with the disease of addiction, there was no differences. I can remember one Saturday night. My home group meets from 10 to 11. I'm from the Just for the Night group in Narcotics Anonymous in Johnstown. And there was 6 adolescents that had went through that facility that went bowling with us one Saturday night. And I don't want to break anybody's anonymity, but there was one young lady, and her mother was a warden of a prison. She came and went bowling with us 3 times because she wanted to know who her daughter was hanging out with. Then her daughter was allowed to go anytime she wanted with us after that. And that said a lot about the type of message that was being presented at that point. We almost lost, you know, Lance touched on a couple of things. We almost lost our commitment at that facility over somebody hitting on an adolescent 2 days out of treatment. You know, it's real critical that we present the message in the right way. That's what it has to be about, is the message. I just, you know, within the last 6 weeks, we had to meet with the facility coordinator for a large rehab that we have an H&I commitment in. It had gotten out of hand, and it turned into a Sunday night meeting for the Altoona area. Exactly what it turned into. We had 15 and 20 people coming up in that meeting. Anytime they wanted to come in and out, and it was no longer an H&I meeting. When we sat down with the facility and gave them our, and presented our guidelines and what our purpose was there, and that they realized that the same type of things that Narcotics Anonymous was looking at is the same type of things that help them protect the guidelines of their facility and the safety for their patients and their clients, whatever they call them. Different places they call them different names, I guess, labels. But, you know, that's just what happens. You know, we are still addicts. And that's why, you know, my grand sponsor told me, he's in this room, by the way, a few years ago, he said, you know, what's going on. You know, I mean, we don't have perfect statistics, but how many people do you know in your life, in your recovery, whose first exposure to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous came through H&I? Probably more than not. It's probably over 50%. The first time they ever heard of Narcotics Anonymous was in some type of an H&I commitment. Just to give you a real quick thing, in our county, we've got 8 counties, right? We got one commitment in the county facility right now. One. We have 7 state correctional institutions. We have 3 commitments. We don't have the people. You know, I was just talking to some people from Pittsburgh, and they got like, and they're from, they have one, or maybe they're not been in Allegheny, but they have one county, one commitment, and they have trouble filling. So, that's a dilemma, you know, because there's a lot of, like, restrictions and things like that are going on. But I know for me, H&I has kept me clean. It has helped me grow as an individual. And if no one benefits from that hour that I spend, whatever, that once a month here or there, I benefit from it as a person. Usually it's an hour and a half each way. I try to get there early, you know, even if it's only 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. It's very important that we represent Narcotics Anonymous and however we carry ourselves in them commitments. Can't show up for the meeting 10 minutes after it started and expect that to be a positive reflection. I don't know if anybody's like, in different places we do things a little different. No, it's good to get the people there involved in really conducting the meeting if that's possible, especially in a more of a longer term facility. On the other hand, we got to remember why we're there, and then in the rehabilitation things, sometimes we have to establish a little more direction and guidance so that we don't get away from what the message that needs to be able to be carried. Every now and then I will use profanity. I try not to as an individual, and that's for me. So I just believe that to a newcomer, for me to come in here and every other word is motherfucker out of my mouth, they can get that back where they came from. And I just honestly believe that if my life has changed, then that's what I need to be able to reflect whenever I represent Narcotics Anonymous. Actually, in any situation, throughout all of our affairs, I don't know. I just, you know, that's just for me that I get really upset when I ask somebody to share, and then there's a lot of profanity. Very seldom do I ever ask that person to share on the facility. I'm a panel coordinator out again. I just think it kind of leaves a bad taste. And that is in our guidelines, and it's not recommended, but we are human, and we're not in church, nor are we choir boys. But I don't know. I just can't. The gratitude for what H&I is, I can just never say enough, and I'm just blessed that I got involved in the sponsorship family that's about service. And H&I is one of those segments of that, you know. And I'm in the chain that Lance is in, and I'm just grateful that I met. Those are the type of men that I met when I got out and came here. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob. Next, I'm going to ask Melissa, our regional H&I chair. Melissa, I don't know your home group. Thank you. She's going to share on the do's and don'ts of H&I.
Hi, family. I'm Missy, and I'm an addict. I apologize for being late. I had car problems the whole way here, so it's God that got me here. That's all I know for sure. Dave asked me to do the do's and don'ts for H&I work, and anybody that's familiar with the World Guidelines, there's actually a do's and don'ts section for each type of facility that we have in H&I. And the one that we normally concentrate on in workshops is for the correctional facilities, because correctional facilities out of all the facilities normally have the strictest guidelines. So these are coming out of the correctional facility section. I brought some materials with me too if anybody needs it. I have the H&I pamphlets available. I have regional meeting lists, and I have some World Guideline books if you're a panel coordinator or a member of like H&I chair or vice chair for any regional subcommittee. And you don't have a World Guideline book, let me know. Okay, starting off with the do's. So do make directories of outside meetings available to residents. The meeting list is one of the most important tools that a client or a customer or a newcomer, however you want to term them, it's one of the most important tools that they're going to get in that facility. You know, there's all kinds of statistics. I heard Bob talking about one. I believe the latest statistics is that 90% of our fellowship first heard about Narcotics Anonymous in an H&I meeting. And that information came from World. So it's important that when they get out of that facility, because basically the H&I is an introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. When they get out of that facility, they need to know where to find us. There's a lot of tools that are available to them within the facility, but getting connected on the outside is really important. Okay, it says, do clarify the facility's roles with anyone that you bring in. Whoever invites you to go to the facility should inform you of that facility's role. Now, when we're talking about a correctional facility, there's normally a process that you have to go through to even go in there. But if it's just like if it's a rehab or a detox or another type of facility, I heard you mention boot camp, which that's a new term for me to hear when we talk about H&I. But what that person should be telling you on the phone, can you go in Tuesday night and this is their requirement? Or, you know, we have certain things like some facilities don't allow you to bring in cigarettes. They always ask no weapons. So if you've got a penknife, you know, or something on your keys, you know, please leave it at home. Sometimes the things that, I mean, we don't even think of things as weapons. It came up once in the regional subcommittee. They were taking key tags into an adolescent facility where the individuals there, you know, cut themselves. So they couldn't have anything that. So it became an issue with the facility. So, you know, if it's not something that you're real sure of, just don't take it in. That's like the best way. Also, I wanted to touch base, too. I don't know if it's been mentioned at this workshop, but I know it's a lesser-known fact in H&I, but if you do H&I in a state correctional facility, if you're going there and you haven't cleared up the wreckage of your past, please be aware that they can keep you. Also, be aware that you're going there as a volunteer. The state of Pennsylvania has a no hostage negotiations policy. Anytime you walk into a state correctional facility, after you go through the doors, you're kind of on your own because there's not going to be anything we can do from the outside. Okay? So do try to get all agreements with the facility in writing. Our area is the Greater Erie area of Narcotics Anonymous, and we recently separated off from Central Western. As a matter of fact, it's like our third year coming up as an area. And it was real important for us because we had to go back and do this. We didn't have the agreements in writing because the information never got passed from chair to chair, or it never got passed from Central Western to us. So we went back and we didn't have anything in writing. So we had to do in-services all over again with the facilities. That's real important if a conflict comes up, because if we're meeting with them and we're going through the time and putting in the effort to say, these are our guidelines, and the facility says, these are our guidelines, we want that in writing. So that if something does come up, we can say, well, wait a minute, this is our guideline, you know, and this is what you told us your guideline was. You know, I heard Bob mention something about a meeting becoming an open meeting. You know, we had already informed that facility at one point or another how we work in H&R. So if the facility was letting other people in, I don't know the exact circumstances, so don't quote me, but if the facility was letting other people in, then, you know, we've already told them, and we have it in writing that we've informed them. It helps to resolve conflict. It does say, too, also to start and end on time, especially in, in any facility, but, like, when you think of a treatment facility, anybody that's been in treatment knows that you get up at, you know, what is it, god-awful early 5:30 in the morning, and every hour on the hour there's something that you have to do. So when they block off that amount of time for H&I, we want to be there a couple minutes early so we can start on time, and we want to leave right on time so that they can move into their next activity. We try to get the residents involved, especially those in long-term facilities. For example, doing the literature, coffee maker, readings, etc. This is going to depend on what atmosphere is set up by the facility. I don't have any facilities that I've ever been in that provide coffee. You know, so I don't know how that would apply, but if your facility provides coffee, you could always ask, you know, a client or a resident to help with the coffee. We normally ask them to do the reading. As far as literature goes, I mean, that's mainly your take. Since the literature is specifically for the H&I meeting, mainly you're taking the bag in along with you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you know, can you come over here and set the literature down? Unless the facility has said, you know, don't let the clients go past this line. You know, but you have to meet, no matter what you're doing, you have to meet our guidelines as well as the facility guidelines. And it's real important that you know what those are. Do obey all dress codes, exercise common sense, and dress appropriately. Shorts. Who would have ever thought? I mean, all of our facilities that I'm aware of do not allow you to wear shorts in. If you think of it, you know, go one step further and think of it for women, men that are in a rehab might be trying to look up your shorts. You know, for men, you wear shorts. Women that are in a rehab might be trying to look up your shorts. I mean, you just have to remember the level of recovery that we're dealing with. A lot of members that are in the rehabs and detoxes, they may not even be there thinking that they're an addict. You know, sometimes we get exposure to non-addicts in those types of facilities. They might be court-ordered there, or, you know, they whatever, life circumstances. And with that, you know, don't go in after working on your car for 6 hours, looking like a grease monkey. Don't go in with your skirt up to here and your shirt down to here. I mean, that's common sense. At least that's what they're addressing as common sense. Okay. Do keep the staff aware of your whereabouts at all times. That's really important, too, especially in correctional facilities or county jails. When we go into a facility, normally there's a certain area that we're told, you know, you go back this hall and the meeting's on the right. Now, some of our facilities have restrooms right there before you get to the meeting, so if you have to use the meeting, of course, you can go to the restroom. But we should be going directly in and coming directly out. That means that we don't sit around in the TV room afterwards. That means that, you know, we don't go in and take Miss Susie off to the side or Mr. Joe off to the side and be talking to them about recovery in a side room. You know, different things. We don't want to do anything to upset the facility. And that's real important that we remember that, because sometimes we might do something that we don't even realize we're doing that could upset the facility. The primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, and it doesn't matter whether that addict is currently in that facility or who is coming 10 years down the road. We want to keep that facility open to H&I as much as possible. Also, if a riot would break out, they need to know where to look for you. You know, if you're supposed to be in room A and you're over in room B because you just wanted to see what the poster was like on the wall, and a riot breaks out, they're not going to know where to go look for you. So do follow all security regulations at all times. We talked about the shorts showing up for an ID picture, thinking, you know, that was nothing. Cambridge Springs Women's Facility up in Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania. If you show up, if you have your cigarettes in your pocket, they will turn you away. You will have to go all the way back across the street to the parking lot to put your cigarettes back in the car. And if you come back and it's after the time that the meeting's supposed to start, there will not be a meeting there that night. The way that they work, whether we like it or not. Okay. Do stamp all literature that you bring into a facility with a local hotline number and regional/area address. We actually, we have a regional hotline number, and just recently we got stamps for our area that have the regional number on it. Some members or some people, future members, are going to leave this facility and they're going to take that literature home in their suitcase. And they might come home and they might not go to meetings and they might not do what they think they're supposed to do or what other people think they're supposed to do. But somewhere down the line, they might pick up that piece of literature, they might be having a bad day, and they might call our helpline number. At least it's available to them. You know, it's just another tool to help them become connected to Narcotics Anonymous. It says, screen all speakers and chairpersons carefully, especially regarding the clean time requirements of the facility and the H&I subcommittee. Currently in our area, we have a member that wants to take other members into a facility that has less than a year clean. Our guidelines go along with the world guidelines, 6 months to share, a year to chair. But our facilities want a year. So on a consistent level or a consistent basis, this member calls me up and says, can I take so-and-so? They've got a year next week. The answer is no. The facility has asked that they don't go in there until they got a year. They can go in next week if they got a year next week. We have to be real specific. Something that has been consistently coming up in my process on the regional, on the area, in H&I on all levels is that a trusted servant is just that. Somebody who is trusted to follow the guidelines of the area and follow the guidelines of the facility in regards to H&I. You've been trusted that you're going to carry out this task, which means if it's a year clean, it's a year clean. And it doesn't have to, you don't even have to question yourself. There's no question. It's a year. Whatever that facility's guideline is, that's what it is. No negotiations. I think that's part of our tradition. it says about screening the speakers and the chairpersons carefully. Normally we have members in place, such as panel coordinators, that you know, some of them work off a selected list. Some of them, I don't know, it's all based on your individual area, how they work. But the panel coordinator should be familiar with that person. At our subcommittee, Bob mentioned something that kind of came up to me, too, was about your inventory is open. At our subcommittee, if we know that you're doing a whole lot of cussing, we will ask our panel coordinators not to use you until you grow a little bit in recovery. We'll approach you on the side in a loving and caring way, but you won't do H&I until you learn how not to cuss. Extremely. If you're cussing a little bit, we're not going to ban you, but, you know, I mean, we have to maintain, as an H&I subcommittee, we have to maintain that relationship with the facility. It's very important. Okay, it says, do contact the facility contact person, let them know they can purchase the literature. From the RSO and WSO, most jails and correctional facilities have funds available for this. Normally this is done by the H&I chairperson and the PI chairperson when they do an in-service. That's one of the pieces of literature, of our literature, that they take in, a literature order form. They would let the facility know that we provide literature strictly for the H&I meeting, but if you need it for your facility or for your treatment facility, you know, for your treatment program, you can order it on your own directly. Sometimes that gets confusing because they think that our literature is there for their long-term use. So, and there's been, you know, a lot of areas maybe can't afford it to provide enough literature to the facility for 24/7, 7 days a week, you know. I mean, it's real important that they understand that there is a difference. If it's H&I literature, it's for the H&I meeting. Okay, it says, do inform the contact... Oh, I did that one. Do make sure that all speakers carry a clear NA message of recovery. This has come up a lot. Basically, we don't really care that if you have alcohol, if alcohol is a part of your story, there's not a problem to mention alcohol. But for a clear, concise message of Narcotics Anonymous, please identify yourself as an addict when you go in, not cross-addicted or anything like that. Please, if you go to another fellowship, please mention it as another fellowship. Basically, you're there to represent for that hour Narcotics Anonymous. We want to make sure that that's a clear message. Do follow the guidance found in the WSC H&I handbook, which is also a foundation for your area guidelines. Okay, don't break another person's anonymity or tell his or her story. You see somebody that was in the fellowship 6 months ago and they say, hey, is so-and-so still clean? I'm sorry, come to a meeting and find out. I can't tell you. It's not my business to go in there and tell them. I don't know if there's a personal conflict that they have with that person. I don't know if there's a personal interest they have in that person. I don't know what's going on, but when I go in there, I'm only there, and I can only identify me. I can only talk about me. Don't take a member who has friends or family in the facility. If you know that you have a friend or a family member in the facility, there's another one in here. Don't show favoritism to anybody. We want them all to receive an equal message. If you know that Cousin Joe is in the rehab, please refrain from going in until Cousin Joe finishes his term. Each area, you know, I don't know, you can get probably some more information from your area. A lot of questions have come up in regards to sponsorship under this do's and don'ts. We recommend that while they're in treatment, they deal strictly with treatment. You can give them a meeting list. Say, I go to Saturday Gratitude in the Hood. When you get out, come see me there. If you still need a sponsor, we'll talk about it. If you need a contact person, it's not good for me to be taking somebody to a meeting from that facility and then going in like Monday night and doing H&I. That can cause a conflict. If that person comes up with a dirty urine, I could be a suspect, and now the eyes are on Narcotics Anonymous. While they're in the treatment facility, and we even have some treatment facilities where after the members finish, they go to a long-term program, and during that long-term program, we're asked by the facility to have a low level of contact with them because of that. So members of H&I, you know, be aware of what that facility is asking. Says don't discuss, don't debate which drugs are acceptable. NA is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. Self-explanatory. If somebody comes up and says, well, I think I can still smoke weed, I'm sorry. Our program is complete abstinence from all drugs. It says, don't get involved in discussion with the inmate's guilt or innocence. We're not lawyers. If we are lawyers, we're not in there to solicit business. We're in there to talk about Narcotics Anonymous. Don't discuss conditions within the facilities or opinions about staff members. I ran into this myself. I was in a facility. I had an opinion about a staff member. I went back to the facility to do H&I, and the girls were all talking about this staff member. And I really, really wanted to join in the conversation. But I had to be quiet, because had I joined in the conversation and one of those girls took it back to that person, then I've caused a conflict and I've involved Narcotics Anonymous. Don't give or accept gifts. Gifts can be a cigarette. Don't carry excessive cash or expensive or flashy jewelry. Please remember, most addicts that are in a detox or in a rehab are fresh off the street. If you're not paying attention, you can lose your money, you can lose your jewelry. Nobody has a liability because you chose to take it in there. We've already asked you not to. Don't show favoritism to any inmate. Don't carry letters in or out of the facility. Somebody asked me before about this, and I don't know if I really have a clear answer, but they said, you know, my cousin goes to SDI Greensburg, or who's in the jail there, and I want to write him letters. Make a choice. You're either going to write him letters or you're going to do H&I. I mean, otherwise you've got your name on an H&I list going into the facility, and you've got mail going back and forth in the facility with your name on it. They monitor all this kind of stuff. They look at that stuff when you're in a facility. Don't carry in any contraband items. Once again, be very careful, because what we may think is not contraband can be contraband to them. Don't give out another person's address or phone number. This includes yourself. I had a real bad experience with this phone early in recovery. There was a gentleman. He was real anxious. He wanted to get involved. I said, here's my number. Call me when you get out. I'll help you get connected with some men. I think I'm doing the right thing. I get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. This ain't working. I just used it. I'm going to blow my head off. I don't know the guy's last name. I don't know his phone number. I don't have anything. I can't even call mental health because I don't have call waiting. I can't click over to another line. I have no tools available to me. And had I not given out my phone number, that would have never happened. Plus, when it comes to your address, fresh in recovery. We all know what that means. We all have behaviors. Don't give the residents money. Hey, can I have a quarter for a phone call? I need to call my mom and check on my baby. Sounds sympathetic, but I'm sorry. The best thing to do, don't take it in with you. You leave it in the car, you won't even be tempted. Don't take a person into a correctional meeting who is on parole or probation unless they specifically get permission from the parole, probation officer, and the facility. Each facility has its own guidelines. Some facilities require multiple years off of paper before they even go in to do an H&I meeting. Check the facility's guidelines. If a person is on, we have a county jail, well, it's not ours, our areas, but we have a county jail in our region that has no guidelines. They can come out of jail and go back in the next week and do an H&I presentation. I don't know how healthy that is, but it's the reality. So, you know, I mean, if the facility doesn't have a problem in it or a problem with it, you know, unless a problem would arise where there's maybe a question of what, you know, if there's something going on, some activity that we're uncomfortable with. But other than that, go with the facility guidelines. Don't take a person without standing warrants. Once again, they can keep you. Don't give anyone your personal address or phone number. Did I get them all? I think I got them all.
Thank you. Well, we're about out of time. Thanks for signing up, volunteer list. That gives you your workshop for the year that's necessary. And I hope you take this home and read it, too. That's all we have. Thanks. We ran over. Everybody wants to go eat. We'll let you go eat.